1. Austin, Texas, March 1886. What was a man's life worth? Harrison Rutherford stared at the article in front of him. The coarseness of the newspaper it had been printed on almost like sand against the polished mahogany surface of his desk. The headline from the center of the paper stared back at him in big, bold letters. Jury convicts Wade Tillerman. It was only 4 words, and yet each time he read them, he felt as though a knife had been thrust into his chest. But it wasn't his chest he should be worried about. It was Wade Tillerman's neck, which was set to swing from a noose in another week. Harrison pushed his chair back from his desk and sank his head into his hands. Was there anything he could do? File an appeal, sure, but on what grounds? Ask for a stay of execution? But again, on what grounds? The gossip rags that had circulated through Austin throughout the 2 weeks of the trial were full of theories. That the judge had been paid off, that the witnesses were being bribed, that the jury was being blackmailed. But he couldn't prove a lick of it, which left him sitting alone in the office inside his house, staring at the bold words of the headline, while Wade Tillerman was locked in a prison cell. He had the sudden urge to grab the special edition of the paper, printed solely to spread news about the trial, and toss it into the fire. But that wouldn't erase the verdict the judge had delivered a few hours earlier. Innocent men weren't supposed to be convicted for crimes they didn't commit. Was it his fault? Had he done something wrong as Wade's lawyer? Maybe if he would have found one more witness, or asked a few more questions when Mr. Crist or his son were on the stand. The grandfather clock gonged the half hour, and Harrison jolted at the noise, then glared at it. It was a monstrously large and gaudy clock that had cost far too much money. But it seemed every wealthy man in Austin had a grandfather clock in his study, and so Harrison had bought one. And he'd put dark, heavy drapes on the window, just like every other house had on his street, and ordered a gargantuan mahogany desk. Again, like everyone else. He'd tried his hardest to keep up appearances, and it had worked. For a young man fresh out of law school, determined to prove he could make a name for himself without using a lick of his father's money, he'd done well for himself. Now, 7 years later, he was in the position of having done work for just about anyone of importance in Austin, and he'd been invited to more highfalutin dinner parties and balls than he'd ever be able to attend. Not too shabby for a man his father had claimed would fail without the family money. Or at least, it hadn't seemed like he'd done too poorly for himself. Until today. He looked around the office. Strange how he hadn't really hated the fancy furniture and expensive drapes before. Maybe it was because none of the people he'd spent the past 7 years ingratiating himself with were keen on talking to him anymore. Turned out the Austin High Society didn't take kindly to the lawyer who defended a servant accused of murdering one of their own, even if there was plenty of evidence indicating the servant was innocent. And now that he'd lost the case, he'd be permanently snubbed. Harrison tossed the newspaper aside before the urge to throw it in the fire became irresistible, right along with his law school diploma and his law license. Somewhere in the house, a door closed with a rather loud thud, and footsteps beat a hurried path down the hallway, growing closer to his office. Then the door sprang open, banging into the bookshelf against the wall. Harrison jumped to his feet. "Adeline." She swished into the room in a flurry of lace and flounces. Her pale blonde hair swept onto her head in a fancy updo that must have taken her maid hours to pin into place. He came around the side of the desk to greet her.
"To what do I owe?"
"I hope you're happy," she sniffed. Willis, his butler, appeared in the doorway.
"I'm sorry, sir.